a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
I'm Bernie Hunoff. I'm a state representative from Yankton, District 18. I'm here with Scott Heideprim, our state Senate Minority Leader, and we're very happy to have this opportunity again to talk to South Dakota Public Broadcasting listeners. We're ending the sixth week of the legislative session, and it's definitely the pace has definitely picked up, I would say. A lot of activity is happening. A lot of compromises actually are coming together this week on some very key issues. So that's good news, I think, for the legislature, and I hope for the people of South Dakota. This is sort of a very special day for legislators, and I think for the people of South Dakota. It's a day of unity and reconciliation that's been called by our governor, Michael Rounds, and we just want to join him in the spirit of this special day. Truly, this is something that reflects the work done 20 years ago by a great governor of the state, George Mikkelsen, who really, truly saw a need to bring everyone together in South Dakota. And he was such a great leader. I had a chance briefly to serve with him in 1993 before his untimely death. And he really saw us as one South Dakota, one people, and he truly wanted to address the issues of people on the nine reservations and Native American people throughout the state. And I think we've drifted some from that spirit over the last 20 years, and I'm truly proud of Governor Rounds for calling this special day. Obviously, it's going to take more than a day, but everything has to start with one step, and that's the step we're taking today. So there will be a special program at noon today in the rotunda of this beautiful building, and let's hope it is that one small step toward a better and brighter future for all of us in South Dakota. If we can help our Native American friends solve the problems of poverty on the reservations, it would truly be the best thing we could do for the state of South Dakota on into the future. We're finishing the sixth week of the legislature, and as I mentioned earlier, some compromises are coming together. I'm really happy to report that in House State Affairs on Thursday, we came together on a bill to kind of wrap together a lot of the things that everybody wanted to do in regards to development of wind energy in South Dakota. And I think it accomplished really the two things that I've talked about for a long time in wind energy. We need to promote wind energy, promote the industry on projects big and small and in between. And it really does that. Well, we have an opportunity with Titan to possibly have one of the largest wind farms in the world right here in east central South Dakota. But they needed a relaxation of a restriction that said that you could not have more than 5-year easements. It gave them only 5 years to develop the project, basically. This will expand that to 12 years for a project of that size that also is accompanied with the transmission line. Titan fits that description, and any other company that wants to do that size will also fit that description. So it allows Titan to go forward. I think that's a good thing for South Dakota. And yet, the legislation also will, I think, continue to protect landowners' rights. That's the second thing that we're really interested in. The Democratic caucus has, and I think with some help from a lot of Republican colleagues, have really been leaders, not only in this state, but in providing model legislation for other states in protecting landowner rights in regard to wind energy. You know, the good companies, the good wind companies aren't a problem. They come in and they come determined to build a wind farm, and they're usually very good companies, reputable people who want to make a project work. The problem has been speculators, quite frankly, who come in and just tie up property and probably have no history of building a wind farm and probably no real intentions of building one. They want to tie up the easements and just become brokers in the process, and that isn't good for landowners, isn't good for communities, and doesn't develop wind energy. Another thing that happened on the House side that I just want to mention briefly, yesterday we passed, on Thursday we passed, I think, a piece of legislation that really, you know, for low-income working families in South Dakota, a piece of legislation that if we can continue to get support through the legislature can really make a difference in their pocketbooks. We took the sales tax off food. And you may not think that sounds like a big thing to a lot of people, but a 4% sales tax on food can amount to about 2 weeks of groceries for a working family or for an elderly couple in South Dakota. It passed through House taxation, I believe again on Thursday also. And now, unfortunately, I think possibly for evil intents, I hope not, it's been sent to House Appropriations. It should have went directly to the floor for a floor debate, and instead it's been sent to House taxation. But we're not going to give up. We're going to go to House taxation and make the case. I hope the citizens of South Dakota will let their legislators know over the weekend how they feel about that piece of legislation. It's badly needed in South Dakota. We have, I heard a figure the other day, we have 78,000 South Dakotans already on some sort of food assistance programs. Obviously, we have more working poor than probably arguably any other state in the nation. It's just a really important bill for a lot of people in South Dakota. We're also working on the House side in cooperation with Senator Heideprim and Senator Knutson on the Senate side on a bill to expand our scholarship programs, again, for low and middle-income students. We're the only state in the nation that does not have any kind of a need-based scholarship program. We have the Opportunity Scholarship. It's been a big success, but it doesn't address those students who are talented, maybe getting C's and B's, come from an environment sometimes that isn't so conducive to so friendly to higher education, and yet we have a critical public interest in making sure that they succeed in South Dakota, and this bill would do just that. As I said, we're the only state that doesn't have such a program. I hope by the time this session ends, we join the other 50 states. This bill would not only help students in our public universities, but it would also be a program that we could use in the private colleges and in the tech schools. So it would help so many students all across the state. There are foundations and private donors who would like to contribute if we can create a fund. Also, those funds would be matched on a 50-50 basis by the federal government. So it has a lot of promise. If we can get that passed, again, we'll really be doing something good for working families in South Dakota. On the Senate side, I think I'll turn it over to Senator Scott Heideprim, and then we'll be happy to take questions.
Well, thank you, Bernie. It's sort of interesting to hear Bernie talk about the time with Governor Mickelson. Bernie and I both served in the legislature some years ago and then left to pursue our business interests and raise our families, and now we're back. I was here 20 years ago for the initial year of reconciliation with Governor Mickelson and was very proud to participate in that ceremony, in that celebration, and frankly that process. And I think we owe a big debt of gratitude to our representatives Ed Ironcloud and Kevin Killer for the leadership they've shown on the importance of unity. And it really is something that we are all sincere about. You know, there are all sorts of policy choices that have to be made, but it should be made in the context of unity, of our fascinating, diverse population coming together around one table and making decisions that are best for all of South Dakota. And I'm hoping that today's ceremony of unity will be the first step to doing exactly that. And in the spirit of cooperation and, I guess, collaboration, Bernie talked about some of the bipartisan work in the House. I'd like to start there in the Senate and again talk about wind power, only a different side of wind power than Bernie has been talking about. Bernie was talking about what needs to be done to enable some of these larger projects to have the flexibility that's necessary to go forward. In the Senate today, actually, we will be taking up a series of bills, all of which take a different approach to the contractor's excise tax refund. Just so you're clear about this, some years ago, actually, neither Bernie nor I were here when the legislature and the governor decided to create this contractor's excise tax refund. Unfortunately, it was so broad that it has led to the bleeding of the Treasury for projects such as TransCanada, which would have come to South Dakota anyway. I don't think anyone seriously suspects that the contractor's excise tax refund was the incentive that caused TransCanada to burrow under farm ground in South Dakota to go from North Dakota down to Nebraska. It was simply the shortest route between points A and point B that caused them to do that. But it has cost South Dakota dearly, and we need to plug that if we can, and at the same time leave the incentive in place for projects that actually are motivated by that incentive. There's a bill Jason Frerix has, our state representative from the Wilmot area up in the Northeast, that would actually take TransCanada or other crude oil pipelines out from the contractor's excise tax refund. And then there are these bills in the Senate State Affairs Committee that deal with fine-tuning that refund so that we actually have the incentive for wind power, but so that we don't go overboard. And I am hopeful that by the end of today, I'll be able to report to you that Senator Knutson and I and the other members of the Senate State Affairs Committee were able to come together, and the vehicle will probably be Senate Bill 195, though I'm not sure about that. And that is a bill that is simply titled Revising Certain Provisions Related to Tax Refunds. But what we're going to try to do is target that contractor's excise tax refund for projects that genuinely need the incentive, that would not build but for the incentive, and not incentivize other enterprises that don't really need the incentive at all. If we can make that distinction, we should make that distinction, and that will save us millions of dollars in the state treasury. We need to be sensitive to both the need to save money in the treasury and the need to create an incentive for wind power. I believe we can do both of those things, and we'll have an answer for you probably by the end of the Senate State Affairs Committee meeting today. We also, I think, will have a bipartisan compromise on the problem of unemployment insurance. This is a real sticky problem for employers out there, for small business people out there. And what we think we've come up with is a way of increasing the wage base for contributions and at the same time changing the amount of the wage so that we can make sure that the unemployment insurance fund is solvent going forward. Because of the downturn in the economy, we've had historic hits on that fund, and it's really important that we change the way in which we collect those funds so that we can guarantee to the people of South Dakota going forward that that fund will be solvent. That's the good news and the bipartisan news, but of course in the legislative process there are bills that pass and bills that fail. And unfortunately, I started this week by having a meeting with the media and talking about our attempts to limit the growth and reach and scope of state government and how those attempts have been killed by the majority party, in each case with every member of the majority voting to kill every single measure. The measures that I focused on Monday were five. One that dealt with what we call pay-to-play, that is this practice of people having contracts with the state of South Dakota and making contributions to candidacies for governor in the state of South Dakota. Many states have outlawed or regulated that practice. In South Dakota, we tried that in Senate Bill 142. It was killed on a party line vote on February 10th. We attempted to get the state to part with some of its Air Force. We had a bill to sell airplanes that are currently assigned to the Department of Transportation and used by the governor's office. That was Senate Bill 143, and it died on a party line vote on February 12th in the Senate Appropriations Committee. We tried to limit the spending in state government to 3% or the rate of inflation, whichever is less. And for those of you who might listen to others who say that this is somehow a new idea, this is an idea that goes back 4 years in the legislature. We have offered it every year, sometimes as part of an education package, sometimes as a freestanding act, but we have consistently stood for the idea of limiting the growth of state government at 3% or the rate of inflation. You wouldn't think that would be difficult in a year in which we don't have any growth, but it was defeated with every Republican voting against it in the Senate Appropriations Committee. That occurred on February 4th, and that bill was Senate Bill 144. We also attempted to limit the role of corporations in the financing of political campaigns. You know that the United States Supreme Court recently made a decision that corporations can exercise free speech, and that allows them to contribute in campaigns, not necessarily to a campaign committee. We thought it was wise to require that a majority of shareholders approve of that step before a corporation takes it, but that was also defeated. And then finally, I proposed a constitutional amendment that would have combined the offices of treasurer and school and public lands commissioner. This, ironically, is something that was done by the Republican Party in 1984 and 3. David Volk held both of those positions. I was in the legislature then. No one complained to me that essential services were not being provided, and we saved money. But that proposal was killed on a party line vote. So much for the idea of consolidating offices in state government, so much for the idea of limiting the growth of state government or controlling the role of money in politics and state government. All of those proposals died. We are hopeful, though, that we'll have the chance to work together with the majority party in making some constructive steps in this area. There are still a few proposals around. A reason to be optimistic about some of them. Hope springs eternal, my mom used to say, and so we'll continue to feel that way. That's kind of the end of my report, and we have Eldon Nygaard, a member of the House here, who's been very involved in the issue of texting and driving, and he wanted to say a few words. So, Eldon?
Thank you, Senator. Excuse my voice. I've got a frog living in my throat. In a bill that was introduced last year to include text messaging as a per se violation of careless driving, that didn't make it out of committee last year. This year it made it out of committee, and in a 33-34 vote on the floor of the House, was defeated for reconsideration. But that tells you we're making progress. And sometimes it's not a matter of which bills passed, but which bills have proceeded along on this democratic process of evolution to public policy. There's 57.5 billion text messages in 2005, and already by 2009 there were 600 billion text messages. This was testimony we heard on the committee. 80% of all near crashes and crashes are a result of inattentive drivers, most of which are the text messaging. Some of them are cell phones. And now 19 states, including the state of Washington, D.C., have prohibited text messaging while driving. And I think the public is very interested in it. The public Office of Public Safety testified in favor of the bill. Minnehaha County, for example, 45 accidents caused from cell phone distraction in the year 2008, and there were more in 2009. So it's a growing problem. I just wanted to bring your attention to it. I ask the public, if they're concerned, contact their legislators, and we'll get back at it next year to see if we can do something to make it a safer place to drive in South Dakota. Thank you.
Excellent. Be happy to take some questions.
Yeah, I'll start. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat too. Well, a 1 cent increase in a sales tax has kind of been seen as the last option, the last failsafe for a complete budget meltdown. Will that make it more difficult to pass the bill taking the sales tax off food?
I wouldn't think so. I've been in discussions about that issue, in the hallways, and it even came up, I think, somewhat in taxation committee. I really don't think so. I mean, it takes about 0.3% to replace the food tax. So the sales tax would have to go up to 4.3%. First of all, I should back up. I don't think there's any chance that a 1 cent sales tax increase would pass this session anyway. So it's a moot issue for balancing the budget this year. I think there would always be great resistance to increasing the sales tax 1%, and just making as a general tax increase. I just don't see that happening this year. Probably not next year, and maybe not ever. I just think that you first of all have a certain segment of the legislature who will always be opposed to any new taxes. You have another segment of the legislature who believes that the sales tax is extremely regressive, and they would be at polar odds politically, but they constitute enough of a count that it makes it really, really difficult for any moderate middle to pass a sales tax increase. So I think it's unlikely. Only in the most dire circumstances would a 1 penny sales tax pass in South Dakota.
You know, Chet, it's interesting. The way the question is phrased, it almost involves the assumption that the way to get out of a budgetary problem is to increase revenue, and that the path of least resistance is a 1 cent sales tax. I'm not suggesting that you were stating that as a presumption, but I think before we talk about new taxes, we need to talk about economizing in the government that we have. Increase of 1,500 employees in 7 years, one every 48 hours, a general fund increase year over year over year of 5.5%. These are unsustainable patterns. Nobody running a small business in South Dakota could sustain that kind of a pattern in a downturn. And there's no reason to believe the government can either. We need to stop spending before we talk about spending even more money. And that brings up the subject of across-the-board cuts, which I'm not afraid of, and I think we have to have on the table. We've talked about it since the beginning of the session. That, to me, is a much more desirable end than increasing taxes on the people of South Dakota at this time.
Yeah, and just to be clear, what I was suggesting is it's been seen as the last resort.
Right. Right.
No, fair enough.
Everything else goes bad.
Right. Right. And it is there. And in fact, I think the governor was clear that that was one of the reasons he opposed the penny increase for the cities, because that would deprive the state of that option should the state need it.
Sam, we'd sure like a question from Delmon. We answered everything.
Well, if you excuse me, I've got a Commerce Committee meeting, so I'm going to have to leave.
We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
See you.
You
next week.
Thank you.